I'm Dr. Agnes Thomas, psychologist and animal telepathic communicator. I'll be your host tonight as we listen to what our animal friends have to teach us about the way they view the world, their missions, and they tell us about their incredible spiritual insights. Today, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the heart connection and the energy grid. During the first 15 minutes of the program, I'll tell you some interesting things about animals that I found while doing research on the animal mind, and also learn from conversations with the animals themselves. The second part of the program is reserved for listeners who may want to call in questions and talk about the topic of today's show, or perhaps they have questions about their own pets. Please reserve your calls until the presentation part is finished. The toll-free number here is 1-888-268-4313. Again, that's 1-888-268-4313. Now, much of the information to be presented today can also be found in my book, Pets Tell the Truth, A Mystical Journey into the Animal Mind. It is available in bookstores everywhere. Well, let's talk about the energy grid, what it is, and what does it have to do with communicating with animals? Well, first let me tell you that animal communication is a learned skill, and it not only provides insight into the mind of animals, but it gives the communicator a glimpse of a higher spiritual realm. It is a peek into the world of benevolence, simplicity, non-duality, and complete mutual understanding. It is a portal into what mystics call the universal mind. I'm sure you've heard that term used before, the universal mind. Well, one day I was talking to a cat that communicated its understanding of the universe. My question to it was, how do you know so much about the universe? And here was its answer. You humans believe yourselves to be separate beings. Animals know that we are all one. We are all connected with every other life form. Humans, animals, plants, rocks, oceans, and even Mother Earth herself. Well, I think like a scientist, so I had to ask further. In what way are we connected? The kitty answered, we're connected by an invisible band of energy, which we call the heart connection. It is energy of pure love. It is energy of deep attraction and attachment. It holds the entire cosmos together. It looks like a web. Some humans call it the ether. We call it the heart connection. Well, that was quite an answer, and it kind of blew me away, and I had to find out if that could possibly be true. For those of you who want to know how an animal communicator can talk to your animal over the telephone, even if you're miles away, it is through the heart connection. Let me tell you how it works. The communicator first connects with the person's voice over the phone and receives back a telepathic image of that person. The communicator then follows the person's heart connection to find their animal. Supposing you have a black lab. Well, there must be thousands and thousands of black labs in the country. How do we find their animal? It's through the heart connection. This is something you can see through inner vision. The best way I can describe it, it is a band of energy that looks like a distortion of air above a heat source, for example, a candle. As the fire heats the air around it, it expands and also rises. The warm air makes anything behind it look distorted. It is something that the telepath can see with inner vision. These energy bands connect not only the animal mind with its person, but with all other humans and animals that it feels an attachment. If you think of a big net covering the earth like a grid, animals say that at each intersect of the energy bands represents a life form. So if you have two bands, one's vertical, one's horizontal, at where they intersect, that is a life form. The grid has bands of energy that are horizontal, vertical, and transverse, and they extend in every direction as far as one can see. When you enter the telepathic field, you can see these. Visionary artist Alex Gray has painted the grid as it extends from a human body. This you can look up in the library, or you can see in the bookstore in his book, Sacred Mirrors. He also has a meditation tape that helps artists to see the grid and incorporate it into their work. The grid also extends downward into the earth, like facets on a diamond, until they come to a point, which would be towards the center of the earth. Animals living on the earth are in equilibrium with the earth's energy grid. When there is seismic activity deep within the earth, the grid becomes distorted, and animals feel their effects. When this happens, animals become confused and feel unsafe. They will move away from the area until they find a new location where the distortion of the grid no longer affects them. This is how the animals operated when the tsunami came in 2004, right after Christmas, and no animals were hurt except the ones that were captive in their homes. I first heard of the existence of an energy grid when I was in my early 20s, and I was reading about Edgar Cayce and his description of the Akashic Field and the Akashic Records, and I was trying to find out what this all meant. It appears that it is the background fabric of the universe which makes form possible, and it also appears to have some kind of property of record-keeping. It's like a record-keeping repository for everything that has ever happened, is happening now, or ever will happen. Well, recently, just before I published my book, I ran across some research by Vladimir Poponin, who is a nanobiologist at the Russian Academy of Sciences. He came for a sabbatical to the University of Wisconsin, and he did an experiment with cells in a bell jar. For those of you who are not scientists, a bell jar is a thick glass jar in the shape of a bell. And it has a lid that has a nipple on it that you can vacuum out the air. Well, he had the empty jar, and they vacuumed out the air, and he shone a laser light right through the jar. And he was recording the behavior of the photons, which are tiny particles of light, inside the jar. And when he did, he was recording the activity of the photons. And it turns out that all he got was a random pattern. Next, he took one of the students that was in his laboratory and took some cells out of the inside of the student's mouth. And he placed it in the jar, vacuumed out the air again, and then shone the laser light through it. And to his surprise, what happened was that the behavior of the photons in the glass jar formed a sine wave, meaning that it actually affected the energy, the photons around it, and its energy formed this sine wave. Next, he took the glass jar and he opened it again, and then he vacuumed it out, cleaned out the jar, vacuumed it out, and again, he shone light, the laser light through it to the photons. And to his great surprise and everybody else's, the energy was still there. The pattern, the sine wave of that particular, of those particular cells was still there in the absence of the cells. This is really a phenomenal study, because it indicates that anywhere that our bodies or our energy has been, we leave a trace in the universe. We leave a trace on the earth. So that is one of the reasons that sacred sites can be so appealing. The inside of churches, they can be very moving, because we actually leave a trace. When you talk to someone in the spirit world, now I'm not a psychic, so I can't talk to people in the spirit world, but when you talk to people that can see people in the spirit world, you can pick up on radiographic recording a sine wave or an energy that is not physically present but is present. Well, more recently, scientists like Niels Bohr, David Bohm and Rupert Sheldrake have investigated the implications of such an energy grit. Sheldrake, who studied the behavior of homing pigeons, wanted to know how pigeons could find their way home once they were away from the nest. And he discovered something that he calls morphogenetic fields, meaning the origin and development of form. Animals use the grid as telepathic channels to connect the animal to its home, flock, herd, or persons. Animals say that the grid represents rays of the source, meaning the creator, that extends everywhere to become the background fabric for the manifest world or the physical dimension. It is also the medium by which a psychic or telepathic person in the physical dimension can communicate with animals or humans in the afterlife through the grid. Lynn McTaggart, who is an award-winning investigative journalist and author of The Field, claims that the energy bands are also present in the body, and they allow for communication from one cell in the body to another, from cell to organ, and also from cell to brain. All cells within the, now listen to this, this is an interesting way to look at this. All cells within the entire body are in constant communication with all other parts, so that the needs of a single cell can be attended to by each organ system and the brain. In a sense, you can think of the entire cosmos as the body of the Creator itself, always sending and receiving information about the welfare of all of its parts, including us. I'm going to read you a little bit about what Sheldrake has written, and I have included in my book. And I'm quoting from page 119 of my book. Sheldrake believes these fields are the basis of interconnection not only of space, but also time, a wide range of unexplained intuitive powers of humans and animals may be explainable in terms of the characteristics of morphic fields, and he lists them. 1. Morphic fields link members of social groups and continue to connect them even when they are far apart. These invisible bonds act as channels for telepathic communication between animals and animals, people and animals, and people and people. 2. These links, acting like invisible elastic bands, also underlie the sense of direction that enables animals and people to find each other. 3. Animals imprint on their home environment or on other significant places are linked to these places by morphic fields. Through these connections, they can be pulled or attracted back toward familiar places, enabling them to navigate across unfamiliar terrain. So this is the way they find their way home. The sense of direction given by these morphic fields underlies both homing, meaning the homing behavior of pigeons, and migration. 4. Morphic fields link animals to the objects of their intentions and could help to explain psychokinetic phenomena. 5. Morphic fields link animals to the objects of their attention, and through these perceptual fields, animals can influence what they are looking at. These fields underlie the sense of being stared at. So if you're sitting on a park bench and you feel like somebody's looking at the back of your head, you feel it through a telepathic channel. He continues, he has outlined common features of animal telepathy. First, animal telepathy involves the influence of animals on other animals, independently of the known senses. So this is not a somatosensory function. Telepathy usually occurs between closely related animals that are part of the same social group. In other words, it takes place between animals that are bonded with each other, as it would be sort of in a, say, a pack of wolves. 3. In schools, flocks, herds, and other social groups, telepathic communication may play an important role in the coordination and the activity of the group as a whole. I saw a video made of an experiment that Sheldrake did, and he had a flock of pigeons, and we were watching how the pigeons flew in unison and communicated with each other to find home, even if they have their home, their pigeon coop on a wheels, and they moved it 300 yards away. The pigeons flew around, but still communicated to each other that the coop was there, and they found the coop, despite the fact that the home base was moved. Four, at least in birds and mammals, telepathy has to do with emotions, needs, and intentions. Feelings communicated telepathically include fear, alarm, excitement, calls for help, calls to go to a particular place, anticipation of arrival, departures, and distress and dying. He says that these features pertain to human telepathy as well, especially in dramatic cases of human precognitions concerning accidents or death of loved ones. He points out that morphic fields can explain the interconnectedness of not only groups, but between individual beings, the trees, plants, and even the earth itself. This interconnectedness can be disrupted by cataclysmic events such as earthquakes. The impending quake disrupts the morphic field in such a way that animals have been reported to exhibit strange and bizarre behaviors. For example, in the 1970s, the Chinese State Seismological Bureau issued a warning that a serious earthquake could be expected in the province of Liaoning within the next few years. That same year, a few months later, snakes came out of hibernation, crawled from their burrows, and froze to death on the snow-covered surface. Rats appeared in the open in large groups and were so confused that they were able to be caught by hand. Hours before the earthquake actually occurred, geese flew wildly, crashed into trees, and dogs barked as if they were mad. Pigs began to bite each other or dig beneath fences. Chickens refused to go into their coops, and cattle ran away. Rats and small rodents came out in the open and acted as if they were intoxicated. This mass disorientation of animals at times of seismic fluctuation has been used as a predictor of impending earthquakes by other countries, including the United States. It will be very interesting to hear what our listeners think about what I've just talked about. Let's talk about it. The call-in toll-free number again is 1-888-268-4313. That's 1-888-268-4313. I'd love to hear some feedback from you, so call in. Let's talk about this. This program is sponsored by Garnett Publishing in Cleveland, Ohio. Is your church organization looking for a fundraising project? Why not have your members get together and contribute their favorite recipes and publish your organization's own cookbook? Our church did it, and it was a really fun and interesting project. Some ladies even wrote a paragraph about how long the recipe was in their family and special days that the dish was served as a tradition. You can contact Garnett at www.garnettpublishing.com. You can also call them at area code 216-458-6100. I'm anxious to hear from some callers. Let's take a moment to think about what we actually talked about. Animals say that we are connected to the source. They don't call God God. They call it the creator of all, or all that is. And to them, it is a source of pure white light. The filaments of that light extend everywhere in the universe, as far as you can see, and it includes everything in existence in every universe in existence. These filaments that connect them connect them with everything else. And this is what they're really talking about, how we're connected with each other. When they say we're all one, that's what they mean, that we are all one, because we're connected by these filaments of pure love. They say that God is love. And if you look at it this way, the way animals explain it, it looks like it absolutely is true, not only just in terms of regular belief, but in terms of scientific explanation of the connectedness of all.
Tell me when I'm on.
This is Pets Tell the Truth. I'm sorry, we've been having a little difficulty with our call-in service. We may not be able to take viewer call-in tonight. I apologize. But we will be talking next week with callers. Next week, actually, we have a guest. Her name is Melissa Pierce, and she is the she is also a psychologist, and she's the author of Touched by a Horse. And she's going to give us some insight into the mind of horses and the inspirational messages that they send to her and also for us. Since we aren't going to have callers tonight, I'm going to continue, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about Mother Earth, a living being. In my book, I talk about plants, trees, rocks, and Mother Earth. This is a quote from Michael Talbot, who is the author of Holographic Universe. Take a moment to consider this. Look at your hand. Now look at the light streaming from the lamp beside you and the dog resting at your feet. You're not merely made of the same thing. You are the same thing. One thing, unbroken. One enormous something that has extended its uncountable arms and appendages into all the apparent objects, atoms, restless oceans, and twinkling stars in the cosmos. Again, he's describing the energy field that the animals say comes from the source. This is from Matthew Fox, author of One River, Many Wells. Love all creation, the whole and every grain of sand in it. Love every leaf and every ray of light. Love the plants. Love the animals. Love everything. If you love everything, you will perceive the divine mystery in all things. Once you perceive it, you will comprehend it better every day, and you will come at last to love the whole world with an all-embracing love. That's Matthew Fox. When you learn how to connect with the telepathic field, which is really connecting with the universal mind, everything opens up for you. It's not merely just connecting with animals. You can connect and have an in-depth, heart-to-heart conversation with anything that is alive, and everything is alive. Mother Earth herself is a living entity, a living spirit, a living being, with an energy field surrounding it, the same as any other object. Imagine, if you can think of it temporarily as the Earth and its atmosphere, it will help you to sort of envision the energy field. Let me illustrate. A conversation that I had with a rock told me much about life and civilization. As I walked along a beautiful wooded section of Cleveland Metro Park, an interesting-looking stone caught my eye and I picked it up. It was stratified, that is, it had many layers. I sat down and I became quiet in order to talk to the rock. When you enter the telepathic field, you can talk to anything. It's all the same thing. I began with the usual question. What do you like about being a rock? Knowing it was a fellow being, I asked a deeper question. Will you tell me about your life and relationship to the earth and all other life? I was absolutely astounded by and have never forgotten its answer. The rock said that the earth remodels itself according to the attitude of humankind, because humankind exists in the energy field of the earth. If humankind's attitudes are negative or hostile, the earth will remodel itself to provide a hostile environment so humans feel at home. Remodeling will take the form of volcanic eruptions, earthquakes, storms, floods, and other natural disasters that affect masses of people and earth's other inhabitants, like animals. If humankind's attitude is benevolent, that's another story. The earth will create a nurturing, beautiful, fruitful environment so that humankind can survive and feel at home. So our thoughts, which are more than just thoughts, but also things, create the world in which we live, hostile or gentle. Look at what's happening right now. Think of the attitude of man, and think of the destruction that's going on. Think of the hurricanes. Think of the earthquakes. Think of the destruction going on through war. This is all happening because of our attitude. Native Americans are very much in tune with Mother Nature and Mother Earth. They feel the vibrations beneath their feet. They feel the pain of trees, plants, and animals that are starving for clean air to breathe and water to drink. They hold ceremonies to invoke nature's spirits who can help to restore the delicate balance of nature and to ensure the survival of all life on Earth. I have never experienced this, but I have many friends who are Native Americans, and they are deeply connected not only with the Earth's energy field, but the Earth, Mother Earth itself. Consider the following consultation. I was doing a film shoot for a workshop video on animal communication at a place called Buttermilk Falls, which is situated within the Cleveland Metro Park system. The Metro Park is a land preserve set aside by early settlers in Ohio for the conservation of nature. It is a circular strip of land surrounding the Cleveland area and sometimes is beautifully referred to as the Emerald Necklace as it appears from an aerial view. A series of parks begin at Lake Erie, loop around and within several counties, and close at Lake Erie, much like a necklace laid out on a circular, circular on a flat surface. Buttermilk Falls is a small, pretty, and slowly falling falls located in an area of the necklace called North Chagrin Reservation, which is east of Cleveland. The slate at the base of the falls has been cut away in layers and removed for commercial building projects. We have a lot of natural slate in Ohio. The waterfall created a peaceful and pleasing sound while I gazed upon it and tried to communicate with it. It was very happy to communicate with me. I asked it how it liked being a waterfall. It answered that it enjoyed being what it is. The reflection of light upon it made it a beautiful and constant show of nature within its particular environment. My question of whether the slate rock could perceive the differences in the season was answered in a very strange way. The rock explained that in winter, it pulls back its energy and goes into a sort of hibernation and rest. I did not know this about rocks. It is rejuvenated by an energy received upward from the earth. So in the center of the earth, there is a energy that I guess it filters upward or it is sent upwards in some way. In spring, this energy is brought forth and surrounds the entire area. Positive and healing energy comes to that place. I was really unaware of this kind of activity occurred in nature. I thanked the waterfall and the slate for their communication, which left a deep impression on me. Perhaps Mother Earth replenishes all life in the same way, I thought. I had an occasion to speak to another rock that was positioned behind my house. As I focused on it, I found it to be a very interesting being. It told me that its strata represented many periods, many experiences in its life. It said that it had been witness to at least 7 ice ages, and that it was part of what was once a greater rock formation. There has been, in fact, at least 7 ice ages that we know of. It explained that when the glaciers began to melt and move surface materials, it broke off from the greater portion and floated downstream with many other fragments of the same greater rock and came to rest on the ground behind where my house now stands. I asked the rock if it was happy. It answered that it is perfectly content to be whatever Mother Nature puts it. Each life form is an experience in itself, and it tries to absorb as much as it can from each experience. Experience here, for the rock, meant location. Like animals, the rock appeared to live in the present moment. It simply would experience life as it is. It needn't worry about the future or think of the past. It was but a part of a great universal plan and was grateful to be so. I ended my communication by thanking the rock for the new knowledge it gave me. I was very astounded that I could learn so much from a rock. I couldn't help wondering why we humans can't be as content as a rock to be part of nature and this ever-evolving plan. Why do humans have to make life so complicated? Why can't we just be? One of the first animal communication workshops I held was in my sister Flo's backyard. Flo had chosen to continue living in the house that our parents built. She was an avid gardener whose yard looked like a showplace, where she so loved working and relaxing. Flo seemed to be able to make anything grow and thrive. I, unfortunately, can't. Some people just have that gift of communication with plants. I've been very impressed with her garden and the lush growth, which became more vivid to me during the workshop. One of the exercises involved in each of us involved each of us finding a plant to communicate with. This was an introductory workshop. I picked a small, delicate-looking plant, which I later discovered was thyme, the herb thyme, growing in the herb garden adjacent to the back of her house. I opened a communication with it. It said it was very pleased to be in what it experienced as a very happy garden in which all of its life forms got along with each other. It said that part of the energy was of the garden was Flo's, and part of it was my father's. He was an avid gardener, too. She inherited her love of gardening from our dad. I asked the plant the usual round of questions. It identified itself as a male entity. I asked it, I wanted to be a little brave, so I asked it to show me its perception of God. It's probably the best explanation I've ever heard, and it goes something like this. Everything is light, sound, and vibration. It showed me, through the screen of my consciousness, bars of music. And it said every sound has its own vibration, attracting particles of matter from the earth to create a life form. Then it showed me a musical note being formed. Each form is perfectly orchestrated with every other form to create a sound. He called it the sound of the universe. He said to me, "You humans refer to it as the celestial sound." I never did understand what that meant. He then showed me what reminded me of the Big Bang, although he didn't use that term. He said that from the beginning of time, referring to the human construct of time, every segment of our history had a different sound or melody, and each sound represented some stage of development or evolution of the cosmos. Each melody was part of a song being sung by God, and that there are many songs. I asked him, "Did God create the sound?" And he answered, "God is both the creator and creation. It is both the maker of the sound and the sound itself." I was very moved and surprised at his sophisticated answer, and I told him so. He said to me something that was very interesting. "You humans go wrong when you assign human characteristics to God. God is not a human being. You think that God must be like you, but God is not like you. You are like God." Well, this kind of puzzled me. I asked him for clarification. "Your essence, your divinity, your spirit is God. There is only one soul, and everything in existence is the expression of it." Well, I thought about that, and it touched my heart deeply, and I decided that he was probably right. We project our own image onto God when actually God's not a human being. Later that day, as we were practicing communicating, I had a conversation with the next door neighbor's plum tree located in the property behind my sister's yard and her neighbor's. I remembered that the neighbor's yard was open land before they built on it in 1952. My father used it as a vegetable garden. In those days, everybody used whatever land was available to grow their own vegetables and their own food. The neighbor man, who was handy around the house and in gardening like my dad, had planted a plum tree. At the time of the workshop, the plum tree had been in the ground for many years and was showing signs of aging and dying. In fact, the new owners pruned it back drastically, cutting off much of the dead material. The tree told me that it had been the family tree of those who had first built on the property, and of course I knew these people well because I was a youngster myself and grew up with their children. They raised their family there, the mother and the widow remaining in the house until about 1996. The tree said that when the mother, then in a nursing home, dies, it will also die. Our family knew the neighbors well, almost as an additional family member, and as time passed, Flo and the widow remained close friends. Holding to the promise of following the mother in death, the plum tree was dead the following spring. The mother had passed away the previous October. This is an example of how close everything around us is to us. It's all part of our energy. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about healing from the earth. In addition to this interesting memory, there's another one associated with this area of land. When I was a child, I mean 5, 6, 7 years old, and Flo was just a baby, my grandmother, who owned and lived on a small patch of farmland about an hour's drive away, would visit us. Sometimes during her visit, she would lay directly on the soil in this area of our yard, near where the plum tree was going to be planted. There was a small pathway there joining the two properties because my father's garden was on one side and our yard was on the other. I thought that was really strange, and I asked my mother why Grandma did this, and she said, because it helps relieve her arthritis. As a small child, I really didn't understand this, but later as a scientist, I learned that people used to do this type of thing in order to absorb directly from the earth its minerals, particularly magnesium, to help the metabolism of calcium and healthy bone. My grandmother was a Hungarian immigrant and spoke very little English, but somehow in her wisdom of the earth, she knew that what she needed for improved health was in and from the earth. This memory became for me a validation of what Buttermilk Falls had taught me about absorbing energy from the earth. So one day I decided to communicate with the soil, and I was surprised to discover that some of our family's energy had become part of the soil. My father in particular so loved his home and the gardens that its essence became part of its energy, particularly in the rose plants he planted around the perimeter of the house so many years ago. It's phenomenal because, at least to me, a non-gardener, that these climbing roses, well over 60 years old, are still thriving to this day and blooming faithfully and abundantly every spring in spite of Cleveland's harsh winters. When I talked with the soil, and you can do this once you're in the telepathic field, you can talk to anything, including land. I asked it about my grandmother and why she did what she did with it, and it answered me. The earth provides everything life needs. There is nothing it cannot provide for life to exist. And I guess if you think about it, yes, we're all physical beings, and everything that we use and we need to continue our life is provided by the earth in one way or another. There's a psychologist that lives here in Cleveland, Ohio. His name is Warren Grossman, and he wrote a book called To Be Healed by the Earth. And this book offers evidence apparent that is of this truth. Grossman contacted a severe case of hepatitis while he was visiting Brazil. He thought it was incurable, and he believed that he was going to die. One day, needing to relieve his body of the extreme discomfort of inflammation, and that can be very burning. You can get a terrible burning sensation with inflammation. He lay down upon the ground, hoping to cool off his body. While he was in this position, he could see waves of energy coming up from the earth. Grossman claims to have been freed of the hepatitis and its effect on his body by this energy. He remains free and clear of his hepatitis to this day. He now holds seminars in Cleveland and workshops wherein people can be taught how to absorb and use the energy of the earth to heal their bodies. Grossman claims that the healing effect can be achieved also by sitting on the ground near a base of a tree, positioning the spine to make contact with the tree trunk. He says he can perceive the energy of the earth rising up and into the tree and them feeling the penetration into his spine. I have never seen this energy, but I would imagine it's sort of the same type of an experience that you have when you connect telepathically. And there's something about human beings that when you believe or you think that you're going to die, your mind opens up to many other things that you have not perceived before. There is something about relinquishing a fear of death that raises consciousness to new heights. When Grossman believed that he was going to die, he lost his fear of death and simply desired to relieve his discomfort. Similarly, to those who have had near-death experiences, including me, something happens when they let themselves be completely open to the universe and what will come. Losing the fear of death appears to be a key element in raising the level of consciousness. I think that maybe fear itself is what prevents us from having a higher consciousness or having increased awareness. Consider a communication that I had with a tree in Point Reyes, California, while attending Penelope Smith's workshop. Penelope is the founder of the animal communication movement, and she was one of my mentors. Part of the forest around Penelope's house was destroyed by a fire. I wondered what it would be like to talk to one of the burned-out trees. It should be a very moving experience. I found a tree that was burned, and I asked it a question. What do you have to teach me today? And it answered, look at me. Really look. The part that is above ground has much burned tissue. My roots, or spirit as he indicated, are untouched. I have the ability to completely regenerate and replace every cell of my life. Look at my new branches. And I could see new branches beginning to form from the stump of the tree. I am tighter, closer, and denser than before. More refined, more efficient at processing nutrition and energy than before. I can provide more shade and oxygen to the earth's inhabitants. Can you see that I am the mirror of your struggles with the physical dimension? I didn't know what he meant. He said, come now and embrace me, my daughter. Refresh yourself whenever you wish. I long for you to breathe in my life-giving oxygen. Give me your carbon dioxide so I can perform my function. Look at me and see life renewing itself. And I felt very sorry for it because to me it looked like an injured animal or an injured being. And I said to it, what can I give you? He said, give me your appreciation. Take the garden hose and sprinkle water on me so I can refresh myself. So Penelope happened to have a garden hose nearby, and I turned it on and I sprayed the tree for a few minutes. Water also has an interesting story to tell. I recall a story while I was in telepathic training in Rochester, New York. My roommate, named Abby, had a very moving communication with a stream that ran through this farm. The stream said to her that all it could see from its perspective were faces, faces, faces. The stream originated from an underground stream and emptied into a larger waterway. It said to her, humans sometimes see their faces reflected in the water. Do they not understand that they are water? It's true. Over 90% of the body is composed of water. And it said again to her, this was not my communication, this was Abby's, do they not understand that they and I are one? I guess I never looked at it that way. Yes, humans and water are one. Earth is the water planet. I thought about that for a while, and I kept it in the back of my mind while I was writing my book. Recently, Dr. Masaru Emoto has studied and photographed molecules of water. He discovered that crystals formed in frozen water reveal changes when specific concentrated thoughts are directed toward them. For example, he found that water from clear springs and water that has been exposed to loving words show brilliant, complex, and snowflake patterns. These are crystals, and he's taken photographs of them. In contrast, polluted water or water exposed to negative thoughts show incomplete asymmetrical patterns with dull colors. He suggests that human attitude is an important factor in healing. This is probably why prayer works well in healing and why, like, loving thoughts work well in healing. It also agrees with what we talked about earlier about the Earth's energy field, about the Earth remodeling itself according to the attitude of man. Emoto studies of water support the conversation that I had with the rocks and about the Earth remodeling itself. The Earth provides clean spring water to ensure the survival of all life. Water is a life-giving entity as precious as blood, sustaining life on the Earth. It is the life-giving source of all our food, including vegetables, fruit, and yes, even animal flesh. It is the mother that nurtures all the fish in the oceans and streams. Water is a great gift to the Earth and should be revered in thanks for its contribution to the sustenance of life. I thought about how little respect was given our waterways. When we hurt nature, we're really hurting ourselves. We are taking away the very essence that keeps us alive. It's really interesting how your consciousness and your awareness expands when you learn how to communicate. Telepathy is not a gift. It is a learned phenomenon. It is natural because humans are also members of the animal kingdom. Our brains are hardwired to do this. And it is possible to communicate with anything that's alive, and everything is alive. I want to thank you for listening in tonight, and I hope you enjoy the show. And I would like to apologize to all callers who were unable to get through. I really enjoyed connecting with them. I would have loved to have heard what they thought about what I talked about tonight. I would have loved to have heard about their animals. Each animal teaches you something very special, and every animal is worth listening to. You can email me at TalkToPets. I'd love to hear from you. My email is talktopets@AOL.com. Or you can contact my website, petstellthetruth.com, or you can email me at agnes@petstellthetruth.com. When I was in Orlando earlier this year, I met a woman named Melissa Pierce. She is a psychologist, and she authored some meditation cards called Touched by a Horse. I guess she has been a horse person her entire life. She is going to be our guest next week. She's going to talk us about horses, her experience with horses, and also give us some insights into the mind of horses and the inspirational message that she receives from them. It would be very interesting for people who have horses to listen in and hear what she has to say. I've had many conversations with horses, and they are very, very interesting. I can tell you that champion horses and horses that excel don't do it for themselves. They do it out of love for their person. And when the person rides them, if you can think of a centaur, the sign of Sagittarius with half horse, half man, that's what it's like for a horse and a rider. It's almost like a marriage. And she's going to talk to us next week about that. I hope you enjoyed our program tonight. I'd love to hear from you, and I'm saying good night.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.